Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Welcome to Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Mike Blewett, and it's Fantasy Sports Today. Weekend edition here. For the next 3 hours, we're good to go with a lot of different items on the slate. Both last night, Thursday night, just chock full of information, fantasy information, sports discussions, crazy kinds of off the field and on Twitter types of allegations and nonsense. So there we go. So we're going to have Kevin in here in a minute to chat with me, and we'll get the music turned down in a second as well as we're rocking through this Saturday morning. So anyway, we're going to get started where a lot of people have been going for the last 36 hours or so, and that's on the NBA side of things. Obviously, game one was a very entertaining game. And there's a lot to pull away from it. I think much of it has been parsed by each and every network as many times as possible. We all know the play that everybody's focused on. Tie game 107, 4.5 seconds left. George Hill at the line hits the first free throw. And then on the second free throw, J.R. Smith grabs the rebound, appears to dribble out 3.5 seconds of that clock before he tries to fire off a pass. And then he obviously misses that. We go into overtime, and the Warriors run away with it. You know, Kevin, just to talk about the J.R. Smith thing first, I think it's obvious that he's in a really bad spot. I never really want to see players be in this kind of situation where the all-time GOAT or an all-time blunder. Just kind of feel bad for them. Now, J.R. isn't the prime candidate for you to feel badly for because of much of his antics over the years. Still don't want to see that happen to any player. The unfortunate part is that he's also now stuck in this, what some people would say was a lie, because clearly Tyronn Lue said that he thought we were up one. J.R. Smith seemed to say that on the court to LeBron, and then he backtracked and said, I knew we were tied. I thought we were going to call a timeout. So that's the unfortunate part he's in now. At some point, I think he's going to have to come clean and be like, you know what? There's a lot of confusion. I did think for a moment that we were up one, and that's why I dribbled out. So it's a huge mistake on my part, and I tried to rectify that in the moment. Right, Kev?
Well, I tend to agree with you where I do think in some of those moments you can sympathize with the athlete because of how difficult it must be for them to deal with it. Like, think about how heartbroken, the most heartbroken that you've ever been as a fan. Think about then how that could feel on the player's shoulder. So obviously that type of stuff matters, but I feel that more, that type of sympathy for George Hill. At the end of the day, he choked the free throw. There's no two ways about it, but it happens. Like, people miss free throws, and he even said that he was up all night, I think, watching the replay of the free throw, which sounds like a bad idea. Like, he probably shouldn't spend that much time on it because that's probably just going to cause more frustration, maybe get in his own head. The J.R. Smith stuff, I feel zero sympathy for. And he's brought a lot of that on himself because of the fact that he tried to lie. Here's the thing. He not only did he think that they were ahead, which is horrible. Did you by chance catch the photo of pretty much as he began his dribble out, the photo of LeBron wide open at the top of the key with no defender within 15 feet of him?
So, yeah. So, look, there's a lot to unpack about it, obviously, right? And that is part of it. So it is, I said this on Twitter the other night. I said it over text via you. It is literally peak J.R. Smith, where he makes an extremely athletic play, I think. You know, I'm not, look, it's not, is it the best play I've ever seen? No. But he really made a really nice play. He grabs the rebound one-handed off the miss with KD standing next to him and then just forgets what's happening. I do think there could be some blame to go around the Cavs team because nobody else called the timeout. Mm. When LeBron did try, LeBron actually should have gotten a timeout because he did call it with under a second left, but they didn't grant it to him. But somebody could have called the timeout there. Now, Grant, it is chaos then, right? Mm. They're at that point when people realize he's dribbling the ball out, you're now down to under probably 3 seconds, basically. But nobody called the timeout. JR didn't call the timeout. And for him to say, I thought we were going to call the timeout and not do it himself is insane. He could even get away with grabbing that rebound, balling up, and calling the timeout there. Because him saying, I didn't want to go up one-on-one against KD because I didn't think I'd get the shot off. That's even a reasonable explanation. But you're right. LeBron is open at the top of the key. If nothing else, LeBron is going to pump fake a three and drive and get contact with less than a second left. It's probably what would happen.
But not even that. Like, that's the part. Like, he knew, in his mind, he thought they were ahead. The better basketball play to conserve the clock is to get the ball out of your hands and into LeBron James's hands. And also, everyone knows, I mean, this is just simple sports stuff. The ball moves quicker than the man. So passing makes it a lot more difficult for the other team to foul, if that's what you thought the scenario was. And I do think that you make a good point there in terms of people not, nobody else calling a timeout. It honestly seemed like LeBron went through about seven different responsibilities where he was waiting for the chance to shoot a three, then trying to get JR to give him the ball so he could then maybe make a move, then trying to get a timeout while also instructing JR to at least pass the damn ball so somebody can take some shot. All the while, Ty Lue stood on the side with completely flabbergasted with the whole thing. Now, to a degree, I don't think anybody was really factoring in what happens if George Hill misses and the Cavs have the rebound. Like, I don't know if for you that crossed your mind while watching, but I certainly was just kind of thinking, honestly, I was just assuming that George Hill was going to make it, and there was 4.7 left, and what kind of play would the Warriors draw up, and whom would end up getting that shot? Like, that's kind of what was on my mind. Had he missed it, obviously they would have been heading to overtime, and that would have been a tragic thing for the Cavs, because they probably then they probably still lose, right? And then it's not this crazy blame.
If they
game.
Don't win in regulation, they lose. I don't care how. I don't care if, like, LeBron clanked a three at the end. They're losing in overtime.
I agree. I do think maybe there's more of a chance if it is not as a deflating. This is, to me, the craziest.
I mean, there was a 0% chance
after the way
in going to overtime the way they went with LeBron yelling at J.R. Smith. After they just, when you take a step back, they just pushed the Warriors to overtime in game one. And instead, it ends with LeBron yelling at J.R. Smith and doing the eye roll that Jeff Van Gundy talked about famously in the previous series. And I'm looking at a picture of LeBron with hands on his head right now. So it's just kind of, I get it. Like, I get that I can't put the blame on anybody else but J.R., because I would be confused if I were on his team and he started dribbling the ball out. And Tyronn Lue is probably confused, but you know what? Somebody's got to call a timeout there. Nobody called a timeout. Nobody did. JR made the bad play, but everybody just yelled at him after the play. And then he saw him. He was totally dejected. LeBron wasn't talking to anybody. JR was stunned, obviously making the worst basketball play of his life, and the game was over. They shouldn't even played overtime the way it went, and it got testy and all that kind of stuff too. But so yeah, I mean, that's the play. I'm not picking on LeBron or Tyronn Lue. I'm just saying somebody could have called the timeout other than JR. JR makes the bad play. There's no excusing it. I don't really want to see players, like I said, in that scenario. But as you said, J.R. Smith has not garnered a lot of sympathy from people over the years. Elbowing Jay Crowder a couple of years ago. I don't think his Klay Thompson takeout early in the game was intentional. It did look like he slipped, but
yeah,
you know, I've seen guys make stuff look like they slipped and hurt players too.
Dominic
Sue in football and other guys elsewhere.
I will say, right, because I think what JR did after getting that rebound covered big time for George Hill missing that free throw. And I think that it is well served, because at the end of the day, you got the rebound. So you still had a really, really good chance to win that game despite the fact that he had missed that free throw. But there's nobody to me that was saved more than from the J.R. Smith move than Kevin Durant, because he was not good again. He was draining their offensive flow again. He had 26 points on 22 shots. He was bad in the fourth quarter again, as we've talked about on this show, within the respect to the Western Conference Finals. And he allowed J.R. Smith to completely bully him for that offensive board. He didn't box out at all. And it was that
bad play by KD.
That level of disengagement was something that was talked about heavily in that Rocket series. And it was an inexcusable mistake made. At the end of the day, too, that JR stuff, like, part of it is hysterical. It creates such an audible gasp that it is, of course, going to lead the shows and all of that stuff. At the end of the day, though, I think, right, like, perhaps we all just come to terms with that's who J.R. Smith is. That is not supposed to be who Kevin Durant is. If this somehow were on the other side, to flip the script, where Sean Livingston nudged LeBron out of the way for an offensive rebound after Draymond Green missed a free throw, and then dribbled, and Sean Livingston dribbled it out and missed Steph Curry. That level of insanity, we still then would lead shows with how could you imagine how LeBron did not box out?
I agree. LeBron gets that kind of heat. And but you know what? That wouldn't happen.
100%.
It just wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. To your point about KD. Now, bad shooting night for him. 8 of 22, 1 of 7 from 3. He did hit 9 of 10 free throws, which were clutch down the stretch. You have to give him that. He did have 9 rebounds and 6 assists as well. But what I thought, from a macro standpoint, I know the Cavs didn't shoot the lights out. I just didn't think their defense was crisp at all, Golden State. So that was the thing I took away from them in game one. They obviously, I don't know if they steal one. I don't know if you can call it that, but they get away with one, certainly in game one. You know, the second part of this, so we've talked about him a little bit already, is that, I mean, they wasted just an all-timer performance. An all-timer. 51, 8, and 8. 4 offensive rebounds there. He turned the ball over 5 times, but that's not egregious, especially considering the efficiency with which he was playing. He played 47 minutes. And they actually had even when LeBron came out for that brief period, the Cavs were sticking with him, and there was a bunch of timeouts and stuff that gave him a bunch of rest. It was kind of good management by Tyronn Lue, because LeBron got a decent break there in the first half without them losing any ground. So, which I think he's going to have to do based on – it is odd that the Warriors just kind of turned it on in the third quarter a lot of nights. The Cavs withstood that the other night. But I think you'll see LeBron get the rest in the first half in this series whenever he can get it. Whatever rest he gets, which may be minimal, he'll have to get in the first half, because you need him out there for the entire third quarter for whatever reason. And I think Steve Kerr has illuminated us on this, that he is sometimes frustrated by it. I think he has a hard time with this team sometimes motivating them in the first half of games, and then they come out at halftime and they turn it up a notch.
Just quickly to your point of who stole this game. You ever see some of those videos of like the worst criminals in America? I remember one that stood out where there were a couple of guys who were trying to, I think, break into a bank or some type of store, and they had a brick, and they went to the guy went to throw it through the window, and his other buddy walked in front of it, and he just clunked.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that one. It's awesome.
I think that's kind of what the Cavs were. It was like one of the worst criminals. Like, they almost stole Game One in Oracle, and then they threw a brick at their other guy's head. Like, that's pretty much what they did there. In terms of the Warriors' motivation, it is something that is difficult, and they do have another gear. To me, though, that does not actually seem to be the big problem with this group. They only had 7 turnovers, which is phenomenal. Yeah. Like, this wasn't one of those Warriors behind-the-back, pass-out-of-bounds type of performances. This is a new problem that exists with the Warriors. And a lot of people are trying to chuck it up to the absence of Andre Iguodala. Listen, having Iguodala there would make things easier. But this, it is stemming from Kevin Durant having these isolation possessions and it really slowing down just what they're doing offensively. It is making an incredibly big difference from what they were last year. And I do think that for a while we debated whether, not necessarily we, I mean we as a watching public, who was the better player between Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. I would still come out on the side of Kevin Durant, but as to who was the most important player for this team, there is no debate. It is Steph Curry. And one of the things that really jumped out, I saw this stat. It was tweeted out.
By the way, Kev, though, they scored 107 points. It's not like they were inefficient offensively. The team wasn't broken offensively the other night. There were times in the previous series where they were brutal.
100%, but against the sieve that is that Cavs defense, and with that offensive firepower, they shouldn't have the type of struggles that they do. Here's a stat that I found absolutely telling. Per Synergy Sports last year, Kevin Durant had 37 isolation possessions in the entire playoffs. He is, as of after Game 1, at 128 isolation possessions this postseason. Almost 100 more ISO possessions this postseason than where he was at last year. It's a different team when he's playing like that.
Yeah, he was not. It was very short on ISO plays during the regular season, and he is reverting to hero ball like he did in Oklahoma City back in the day. So we're going to continue talking NBA. There's MLB to talk about. Clayton Kershaw's injury, Mookie Betts on the DL, and more. That's in hour number 3. Football in hour number 2. But Kevin and I will be back on FST right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. FST, the weekend edition. Mike Blue to Kevin Walsh. If you want to reach out to us today, please do so on the phones, 844-843-6879, on Twitter, at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett, B-L-E-W-I-T-T, and Kevin is at The Kevin Walsh. So feel free to hit us up anywhere or any way you like. We'll talk about whatever you want. We're going to do some fantasy football stuff in the second hour, fantasy baseball in the third hour, talking a little bit of NBA right now because it's the it's that time of year, NBA Finals. Just not too much more basketball left in this season, so we're going to keep talking about it. Obviously, big storylines. But for all of you out there listening, whether it's the Fantasy Sports Radio app, which you can find on iTunes and Google Play, free to download, free to listen, or TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or terrestrial radio stations around the country, thanks. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll have some fun with this this morning. So, beyond that, if you want a chance to win 2 tickets to a 28 Yeah, do you want a chance to win two tickets to a 2018 World Series game? Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There, you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 people each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. Find out how you can help and play in a free DFS contest with a shot at winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. So back to the discussion we were having. The turn I want to take now, look, we bashed JR. We get that they wasted the LeBron thing. The worst omen for me going forward in this series is that almost nobody's talking about the Warriors. You talked about Kevin Durant, but yesterday, obviously, most of the talk was about J.R. Smith and what was he thinking and how mad LeBron was. And, you know, I actually still haven't seen the audio from the end of his interview, which was sort of awkward. And, you know, he had been asked that question a number of times, so I have to watch that. But I watched just about everything else. And we'll talk about the fight at the end, too. But the bad omen for the Cavs that nobody's talking about the Warriors. And the Warriors can sit there, like we just said, and say, you know what? We're not playing our best right now. We're up game one. We got to get back to business here. We got to play a complete game, four quarters, and run these guys off the floor, which most people think is going to happen tomorrow.
I do think that it is very possible that they roll the Cavs tomorrow. I think that is very much so in play that they could sweep the Cavs, because I just don't know how you could bounce back from something like that. And I still do believe that the talent gap within these teams is stark. And I get your point that it is, right, like if the topic of conversation is so solely based on the Cavs blowing this opportunity, that could be a bad
sign. Kerr's loving this. Nobody's talking about him.
The Warriors shot almost 50-40-90. They were 51% from the field. They were 19 of 20 from the line. Like, I almost feel as if it is, we are so shocked that game one was not just close. The Cavs 1,000% should have won that basketball game, that maybe we're overstating how bad the Warriors were. I don't think that really was the case. Klay Thompson shot 50% not only from the field but from three.
They got badly out-rebounded is what happened. 53-38.
But I don't think that's something that is going to just shift. Like there's nothing on these rosters that feels like that should just be not the case. Like Tristan Thompson, Larry Nance Jr., and Kevin Love are, I think, significantly better rebounders than anybody on the Warriors. I think Draymond Green and LeBron James then are similar level rebounders. So I would say to you that four of the five best rebounders in this series are all on the Cavs. So that doesn't feel like something that's just going to switch. So if a team shoots 50-40-90 from the field, the three, and the free throw line respectively, and only has seven turnovers, that feels like a really, really big win. Again, the Cavs shot 27% from three. I think it was 6 of 20 on what are considered wide open or at least open three-point shots. So,
by the way, Kevin Love, you mentioned him. I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, sure.
Kevin Love was really good the other night. He played a good basketball game the other night. It's not perfect. He ends up with a minus 13, but like
the one for eight from three is a backbreaker, though.
It's a bad shooting night. I just felt like, okay, that's fair. But I thought in general, he played a good game. He's got to knock down threes, but I can't crush him for one night like that. And I'm not saying he's lights out the whole playoffs, but I can't crush him for that. It's not the reason. He did pick up 13 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
He scored 21 points. He was 9 of 20. His misses, I mean, from two, he was actually really good. But yeah. I just thought in the flow of the game as I'm watching, I'm thinking, you know, Kevin Love's having a nice game tonight. But you're right. The 1 of 8, you can't escape that.
Yeah, and I think in the totality of it, it was a good Kevin Love game. I think part of that is because of what the bar for Kevin Love has been set at based on these playoffs. The foul of Steph Curry on his drive, the N1, was indefensible. He was late, grazed him on the head, and allowed an N1 opportunity. And that also played into the outcome, right, because the Cavs then needed two, not just one, going down on the other end. And obviously all of that stuff factors in. I do think that I thought that his performance was encouraging. Because for him to give you 21-13 on such an awful shooting night, and I feel as if, listen, he's not some stout defender, but for him to not be unplayable because of his defense, it is a good sign moving forward. Like Kyle Korver was 1-for-3. Jordan Clarkson should not be allowed on the court for the remainder of this series. Jeff Green was 1-from-6. It's one of those things where it's like you just wasted what honestly might be the greatest game that LeBron James has ever played, because J.R. Smith didn't know the score and because George Hill choked a free throw. But they went out there and should have beat the Golden State Warriors game one in Oracle, and the Cavs were not at their best. Last year when they beat the Warriors, they scored, I think it was 86 points at the half of the one game that they were able to take. I think they made a record 24 threes or something along those lines in that game. Like, that's they needed to do last year to beat the Warriors. That wasn't the case this
year. You're right, though. They missed a ton of threes. And, you know, the Warriors weren't, you said 50-40-90, but, I mean, they shot 36%. I'm not quibbling over 3 or 4%, but it wasn't their best shooting night from three. 13 of 36 is respectable, but, you know, I bet you on a good night they're going to be better than that. We talked about Kevin Love being 1 of 8. KD was 1 of 7. So a couple of key players missed a lot of threes. And you're right. I mean, that when it comes down to it, it's always going to focus on the one play at the end and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, 10 of 37 from three, you knock a couple more of those down, maybe you have a cushion. So anyway, I've been thinking about that. And I just, the fact that nobody's talking about the Warriors, yeah, it's starting to lead me to think maybe it's a sweep. I said Warriors in six. I thought it would be a comfortable six where maybe the Cavs would grab one after being down 3-1. I don't want to say it's a sweep now. I'm going to stick with my six games, but basically I think one of those games goes away. I think it's going to be a 4-1 situation.
But I do find that to be odd, and I'm not saying that you're wrong in how you're feeling. But I just think that it is a bit of an oddity that coming out of this game, where the Cavs were, I would say, by most people's expectations, significantly more competitive than anybody was expecting, to now feel as if a sweep is in play. Because if the Warriors would have went out there and beat them by 40, right, like, I don't think that would have shocked anybody. And I don't know if anybody's moving off of the prediction that they originally put on the table. But now the Cavs went out there and they were so competitive with the Warriors. I mean, listen, a part of me, again, as I look towards game two, and I'm sure we'll preview it a bunch more tomorrow, it's just, did the Cavs do certain things that they can replicate? Well, maybe LeBron won't have 50 points, 8 boards, and 8 assists, but LeBron James is going to dominate this series and be the best player on the court. And he created, I believe it was 23 potential assists in that game. So it was, the Cavs had a really, really bad shooting night. And I think that the way they did out-rebound the Warriors is something that they can replicate. And I know for a fact that the Warriors are going to have a game where they turn the ball over double than what they did in that game one. The non-Kevin Durant Warriors shot nearly 50% from three. They were 12 of 28.
But you said yourself earlier, the one thing I'd quibble with is you said earlier, I don't know how you recover from this, and I think that's what I'm leading to. I think a sweep is in play, but I still think that the Cavs will take a game. I think they lose tomorrow. They go back to Cleveland. They take a game, maybe even two of those games. But I would suggest maybe they take games 3 and 5. You know, the Warriors, when it's 2-1, I think the Warriors maybe put the heat on for game 4, and we'll see what happens in game 5. But you said yourself, I don't know how they recover. So if that's your thought process and you understand how that they can be competitive, I think that a lot of people are going to be thinking that. Like, I think they are devastated. I think after this series, LeBron James will never play another minute with J.R. Smith, whether LeBron stays in Cleveland or goes to Houston or is in Philly or Los Angeles or wherever it is that he ends up. J.R. Smith's never going to play another minute with LeBron. You know, they'll do everything they can to mix it up. So that's it on the Warriors. Obviously, let's talk about the call, the dreaded call, the overturn of the KD charge overturned to a LeBron block. That happened with 50 seconds left. Is that right?
Let me see if I can pull up the play-by-play.
Is that about right?
I'll get the exact
So pull that up. I think it was 50 seconds left. So my thought process were, in the moment, live, I was like, how is that a charge? And obviously one ref called one way, one ref called the other way. Then they have the inexplicable situation where they're allowed to review it. They're supposed to be allowed to review it when he's in the restricted area. He's clearly not in 36. Okay. So he's clearly not in the restricted area. But they go and review it anyway, and they overturn it. Now, I think every day of the week, that's a block in my book. He slid over. He wasn't squared up. I was surprised Van Gundy, who's usually pretty good with this, and I'm not, you know, look, he's Jeff Van Gundy. I'm just some talking head. But I was surprised Jeff Van Gundy was saying that he was in a legal guarding position. Steve Jaffe backed him up. I'm really was stunned. Tim Legler was on after the game. He said, that's a block every time. And I was with him. But to overturn it is insane. It is insane to me that they would overturn that call by going to a video and saying, we kind of got that one wrong. It is another indictment of the NBA officiating, which was rough in this game. Like, if anybody had a worse game than J.R. Smith, and nobody did, the refs could throw their hat in the ring. I just thought they were really – there was a J.R. Smith strip of KD that they called a foul on, and that was clean. Or was that Larry Nance? I can't remember who stripped it from him. But there was a couple of just a bunch of calls that were given to the Warriors. We see a lot. The home team just ends up getting calls because they're the home team. But it's inexplicable to me, despite the fact that it is protected by the rules, that they would overturn that call. So, even though I thought it was a block.
Not only was it insane, it was actually illegal. What they did was not within the rules, in my viewpoint, because that the only way that you can go and review that is if what is in question is whether he was within that circle or not within the circle, and that is not what triggered that review. I believe it was Ken Maurer said charge. Tony Brothers, who was significantly further away and had the worst angle of all of the referees on the court, came over and said block because he's a complete... No cursing on the air, because he's a fool. And they decided to pretend that they didn't know if he was in the circle or not, when that was anybody with any self-respect can know that he was nowhere near the circle. So they illegally go and then review something that their expert in the booth official felt like they got right. And another thing that is a significant problem with these decisions is you're now slowing this stuff down. And this comparison was made, and it is an incredibly apt one. This is as if you were to go and make pass interference challenged and reviewable. It is going to then be called every time. The more you slow things down and break it down by the very, very second, so this is always going to look like a block.
So this is what I was saying earlier. I was about to say earlier. Part one is it's indicative of how bad the officiating it is, but it is another primary example, and I was screaming for it back in the 90s in the NFL. We had instant replay, then they got rid of it, and I was incensed over it because I thought, how could you not use technology in order to make sure and justify these calls are correct? However, it has now become something, especially in the NFL, and now we see a primary example of it on Thursday night. It has become something far more than what it was intended to do, because we are slowing things down to a millisecond, and the ball moved a millimeter when the guy touched the ground, so it's a no catch. And in this instance, we got to make sure, was he still wavering over towards the middle of the key when KD ran into him, or was he straight up and down? It's ridiculous. I the only thing I'll say about what your criticism, and I think it makes a lot of sense logically. But what I don't know is if they say, hey, we're reviewing this because it's in the restricted area, and then they go on review and be like, oh, he wasn't even close to the restricted area. Can they back out of the review at that point? Or do they have to say, you know what, we thought it was a restricted area, and now we have to make the call as we're reviewing it? Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, the rule is it can only be triggered by if you're going to see if it was in the restricted area, and then you are allowed to re-review the play and see if you got whether it is a charge or a block wrong. And I actually...
Yeah, hear me out again. I want to explain it again to make sure you understand what I'm saying. Say they both thought it was restricted area. They're going to the monitor to check. once they're at the monitor, can they even say, you know what, he's not in the restricted area, we're done with this review? I don't know that they can. Because if the restricted area triggers it, but then they, even if they realize, you know what, he wasn't in the restricted area, but we just have to review this to see if it's block charge. That's what I'm saying. There are, you know, that's probably in the bylaws somewhere, and I understand I'm getting really deep into it, but it's the type of play you get really deep into because it did change the flow of the game, obviously. It went from Cavs ball to Warriors two free throws.
Right, and I think that that's a point. Like, if you're – because, again, the only way you can go over there is if that's there. So if you're there at the replay monitor, you're looking at this, you're like, all right, we look like fools. The thing is, though, it was clear as day to see. One called a charge. The other comes over and says, I got a block. And they go, all right, let's go review it. Nobody mentioned the restricted area when they decided to go review it. That is the problem. And I saw some people trying to defend it, saying, are we really going to have outrage over them getting a call correct? But there's a number of calls that they didn't get correct. As you mentioned, the pair of strips on Kevin Durant that were called fouls. So it is not as if that would have been the only incorrect call. So it is flawed in any way to defend that decision.
It's just kind of crazy that LeBron was the guy in the middle of that, too. You know, like, if it was, I don't know, Tristan Thompson or George Hill that took the charge and they overturned it, I get it. But it was LeBron. I figured he could get one call. We'll come back, talk more about this after the break on FST.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on Fantasy Sports Today, Mike Blute and Kevin Walsh. So, still talking about this game the other night. It's a bummer because it was a good game. And it's boiling down to, they got these calls wrong and JR's an idiot and all this kind of stuff. It's a bummer. Like, I'm bummed about it because I would rather be like, what a great game. What do you think this series is going to be like? You know, like, let's say, I don't know. Let's say the Warriors won. Say KD grabs the rebound and they call a timeout and they hit a shot at the buzzer. Like, how sick would that be? We wouldn't be talking about any of this other nonsense. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? Let me back that up because our friend Mike Leone on Twitter at Two Hats, One Mike, he's a writer and a DFS expert. On DailyRoto.com, his tweet the other night was the quintessential hold my beer conversation. The quote was, everybody will be talking about this block charge call for the rest of time, end quote. J.R. Smith, hold my beer. Like, it was, we would have just been talking about that call forever. And then J.R., put a torpedo in that not long after. So
can I say quickly on that point? Yeah. Was one of the things that to me was so crazy is the four things that had to happen in order for them to lose that game in regulation. The block charge overturn, the George Hill miss free throw, the J.R. Smith, I have no idea what's going on, and then nobody calling a timeout. Are four incidents, if isolated and standalone,
36 seconds, amazing.
They would lead any sports show. Just one of the four. For the fact that all four needed to happen is why. I mean, listen, I mean, I'll be honest. And anybody who's listened to this program or has listened to me anywhere knows I am wanting the Cavs to win this series. I'm an unabashed supporter of LeBron James and the Warriors because Kevin Durant went there. They irk me to another degree. So this is probably my least favorite team in the NBA against what
How is somebody your age not into the Warriors? Is it just because you like LeBron so much?
When he went up against them the first two times, I was just cheering for LeBron to get more rings. When Kevin, it's the Kevin Durant move to me. And it's also, see, it's another thing as well. It's Draymond Green being really not that great and them having to steal a game one victory at Oracle in overtime and then trash talking everybody and him. Like, nobody has more leniency than Draymond Green when he has one technical. It's LeBron blocking Steph Curry, then Steph yapping, then Klay Thompson coming over and yapping. It's this, like, it is this sense of, ha, 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 we're way better than you. In the moments where it's like, do that if you're up 40, you can talk all the trash you want. When you need J.R. Smith to not know what the score is in order to beat a team that you are historically the favorites over, when this team is, like, this, it's one of those.
Yeah, but I don't know what LeBron said to him after he blocked him. I don't know what he said to him.
I don't know if he stared him down or if he said something to him. I know.
It's all right for Steph to defend himself. This guy's a two-time MVP.
That's
about
fine.
To be a three-time champ.
This Steph stuff, maybe I shouldn't even mention. It was more so LeBron and Steph were talking. And the exchange, I do think, is a key point, just to even a further insight into where LeBron
was. I was
going to
get into this anyway, so keep going with it.
Yeah.
I wanted to get into the end of the game stuff.
He blocked him, stared him down, because I mean, that's, LeBron loves to stare people down after a block. Steph said, you couldn't just let me have that one. Which, honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, that's not, to me, that's not showboating. It's trying to make light of a situation where, but at the end of the day, it's like, you can see why LeBron wouldn't want to make light of that situation. LeBron said, get the F out of my face. Which then, obviously, Steph was like, what, Scott? What are you, like, why are you doing that? Because they are buddies, which was shown on display when they were then having the patented NBA jersey over the mouth discussion after all of the stuff broke down. It's more so Klay Thompson then coming over and, like, making a comment, walking away, and LeBron has to follow him so Klay Thompson can actually address LeBron James and not just walk away, because that's, like, it is the skating by on the skin of your teeth while being way more talented than the other team and then having the audacity to be so boastful, to me, is an irritating thing. But more so than anything,
I get
what
it.
Was
and
your...
some people don't like Steph Curry because of the shimmy and the mouthpiece.
I'm fine with the shimmy.
Deshaun
Jackson's one of my favorite players in all of the NFL. I love shimmy stuff. To me, though, it is the Kevin Durant stuff is why I have next to zero respect for a lot of the things that are going
well,
on with that.
All right. You're a full-time hater. I get it. You love LeBron.
That's hating,
okay.
though, the Kevin Durant
it's okay
stuff?
To love him. What stuff, though? The fact that he's there?
Yeah, the fact that they eliminated him when he was down 3-1 and then went and joined the 73-9 win Warriors.
Do you really think, in retrospect, he's made a poor decision by not playing with Russell Westbrook for the rest of his life?
Yeah, but that is one of the he didn't have to stay in OKC. His options were not live with Russell Westbrook your entire life or go and join the Warriors. Those were not his
decisions.
I don't
have a problem with him doing it.
That's crazy to me.
That can spark an entire new segment and a new show, but I don't have an issue with it. I didn't have an issue with LeBron going to Miami.
They're not comparable.
Only with the way he did it, and I don't have an issue with KD going there. Hang on.
They are not comparable.
It is somewhat comparable. It is somewhat comparable because LeBron and Wade and Bosh all came together to form a super team. KD obviously was joining an already established team to form a super team.
No, they were already a super team. They broke the regular season win record.
Very good.
No, not very good, Mike. No.
They didn't win the championship.
They won in 2015.
Now they're
going to
win it every year.
They were one game away.
They are not comparable. When they won 73 regular season games, they did not win the championship because public enemy number one for most people was standing in their way. Greatest player of all time.
Depends how you feel about it. I'm sure you've heard this before. If LeBron would have gone to Boston, that would have been, after Cleveland, that would have been the equivalent of what Kevin Durant did. If Kevin Durant would have somehow, I don't know, joined with Paul George and some other guy. If LeBron, when LeBron left Cleveland the very first time, and decided to go and join Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett.
I like how you qualify that, because you know he's leaving again.
If he went to Boston this time, it would be somewhat closer to what Kevin Durant did. Still not the same
thing. I don't care if he does that.
Ha! See, that's fine. See, to me, though, this is one of the things. There are players, if they want to be held to a certain standard, if they want to be able to reach a certain level of greatness, then you're going to be held to a certain standard. And if Kevin Durant wants to be recognized as a top 10 player in the history of this game, which he undeniably has the talent to do, then he has to be able to reach certain benchmarks in a certain manner. And him not being able to beat the Warriors and then going to join the Warriors and have that level of luxury, I can't acknowledge it. And now, to see where he is at now, to where he is the point of focus for the problems that exist when this team struggles, the fact that people are calling him Carmelo Durant on Twitter because of his performances, because of what he is doing, is stuff that it is coming around full circle, and it is deserved. Because to me, he didn't have to stay in Oklahoma City, but it's just... That is not how you go about achieving your greatness. To me,
that is
indefensible.
You are super fan number one when it comes to LeBron. Super fan 23, let's call you. The Michael Jordan argument for me, if I were to make it, would be, Michael never had to do that.
My favorite Michael one never of all had time.
Michael never had to recruit it. And I do think Scottie Pippen gets so much shrapnel in these arguments, it's ridiculous, because he was an all-time great player,
but
one of the best on-the-ball defenders in the history of the NBA.
Well, you just did it to him, because they are so, Jordan didn't have to leave because Scottie was there, Dennis was there.
I get it.
But teams couldn't shift around in that manner. Huh?
Teams couldn't necessarily, or players just didn't, move around in the manner that they can now and create interesting salary cap carve outs for themselves the way Miami did. Plus, you're taking into account multiple players with $100 million shoe deals and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like the salary, even if you can take a slight pay cut on the salary, it isn't going to materially impact some of these players. I'm not here to spend other people's money. I'm just saying, we've talked about this in the past. Mm-hmm. When players have nine-figure shoe deals, him taking a $3 million or $5 million a year annual pay cut to win some championships is palatable. So let's back off the LeBron Jordan thing for a minute, because I wanted to get to a couple of other things regarding the game. I don't remember where we're at last, because we've gone into a hellhole of debates, which is fine. I wanted to talk specifically about the very end of the game stuff.
Yeah,
sure. The last 2.5 seconds. I think the fact that you can't shoot a shot because the shot clock is about to go off is become the dumbest unwritten rule in the NBA. Mm. That's one. Two, it's not a flagrant two. He just defended the shot that he felt like shouldn't have been taken. I did think it was a cheap foul. Could have even called it a technical, because I didn't think it was as much a basketball play as him throwing his body into Sean Livingston. But to eject him was excessive. I'm glad the NBA reduced it to a flagrant one and a fine, because he did shove the ball into Draymond's face. But what I do think is what I could live with at the time, even though the ejection seemed harsh, is that he was trying to de-escalate the scenario. I don't mind the official taking control in that situation. I didn't think it was another example of poor officiating. I thought he was trying to gain control of something to end the game. It backfired a little bit, because then it was a Draymond being Draymond, and then Tristan Thompson shoving the ball into his face. Let's go meet out in the parking lot, which is dumb, because as Paul Pierce said, or no, as Jalen Rose said yesterday, nobody wants to fight. We are basketball players. A, we can't fight. B, nobody wants to fight. C, nobody wants to get hurt. And D, it's the NBA Finals. What are you talking about? Just go to the locker room. The game is over. So no suspension for Kevin Love, because obviously we reduce everything down to a Zapruder tape. And did Kevin Love step on the court with one foot? Did he not step on the court? I'm glad cooler heads prevailed there. He's not going to see a suspension. So no suspensions for game two, which is good. $25,000 to Tristan Thompson. I think he can handle it. And there you go. So just wanted to get that in there. So what else do you want to yell at me about?
No. If there's more time, I will yell because I wanted to make another point. But I want to say something, though, about the – I feel like almost all of these unwritten rules seem to be terrible. Like, there's a number of them in baseball. They all seem to be terrible. The one thing I didn't necessarily understand is why people were saying, oh, what is Tristan mad about? That is a unwritten rule in the NBA. Like, your beef shouldn't be with Tristan Thompson. It should be with the fact that it exists within the NBA because – that reaction of being bothered by it is not triggered because it is some belief that only Tristan Thompson holds solely to himself. There is
he doesn't have to be a sheep about it. He doesn't have to do anything. Just let the guy shoot it or put your hand up in the air, face guard him, whatever. Who cares? So you lose 126 to 114? It doesn't matter much. He started a fight over it.
I agree that there is. I don't think that he should be losing his mind over it. I'm more so saying I don't understand is it why people seem to be approaching this with a mindset of what is Tristan all worked up about? Like, why is he the one who's now deciding that guys can't shoot if there's a difference between game clock and shot clock? Like, that is...
No, that stuff happens. It's like, become a thing.
Right.
It's a thing in the NBA.
100%.
It wasn't Tristan only. You're right.
100%. To me, though, and again, this is one of the problems where I disagree is the refs were trying to get control of the situation. Them automatically tossing Tristan, which was a ludicrous move, as you saw the replay. That is an indefensible decision.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't
make sense.
It escalated the situation.
It backfired. You're gonna make decisions that backfire, but I wouldn't have necessarily expected it to backfire. But you know, you got Draymond Green there. He's loving it.
See, that's one of the things.
He's in all his glory.
I'd rather you tell me, since I am the unabashed hater of the Warriors. Because, again, I enjoy jawing. I enjoy a good back and forth. I think all of those things are fine. What seems to, though, continue to be the case is where Draymond is allowed to just continuously antagonize people. And it seems to always be not... I shouldn't say not punishable because he leads the league in techs. But it's just he got ejected, Tristan. It was then escalated because Draymond is yapping at him. Tristan took it to another level by putting the ball in his face, obviously, right? But a lot of it still existed from Draymond's role being played, right? We saw that when he's doing the pom-poms dance to Kendrick.
That's
Perkins,
what Draymond does, though.
Who's on the, right,
it's just what Draymond does.
So then you tell me, though, is that not something that should then, on Draymond's side, warrant a technical foul? Because if not, then that's fine. I'm almost to a point where I'm not sure.
Him clapping like that? No.
That's fine.
Just antics. When he starts getting in people's face and kicking them in the junk, yeah, kick them out of games. They lost the NBA Finals because he couldn't stop kicking people in the groin. He got suspended for a game. People are like, I've heard people post that incident say that, you know, he's really going to cost them some time. He literally cost them the NBA Finals for getting suspended for a game. It is reasonable to assume that he was a difference maker in one of those last three games that they lost, and he got suspended for it. So, yes, you have to take the good with the bad with Draymond. It's more good than bad by a long shot, but that's what he does. He irritates people. He makes rebounds. He's not afraid to take a shot, which I appreciate, even though he's not a lights-out shooter. He doesn't wither in the moment. The fact that he started clapping it up and Tristan got irritated, whatever. He was clearly irritated by the game at large. The Sean Livingston thing somehow triggered him into a much larger reaction. I mean, I think that's the deal. I'm just glad nobody's getting suspended because it would all be stupid over a dumb play like that, in my opinion. What else do we miss? Did we miss anything on this?
Well, the only other thing that is very
ready
important
to concede
to mention,
the LeBron Jordan thing?
No, don't. Because this is very important. Kevin Durant left a situation in Oklahoma City where Sam Presti is continuously bringing in talent. That summer, they somehow robbed the Orlando Magic of Victor Oladipo in exchange for Serge Ibaka, which was nonsense. Meanwhile, the Cavs couldn't put a single piece of talent that was better than Drew Gooden or Mo Williams around LeBron James. I think he had every absolute right to leave. We don't have to get into it, though. But just saying.
I don't mind LeBron leaving.
You should mind Kevin Durant because they're not comparable.
I don't mind either of them leaving. That's my point.
I think you should.
They're free agents. Do whatever they want to do.
He can leave.
Come back
it's where
and put
he
a
went.
Bow on this thing. We'll be back in hour number two after this.